Good morning. How you doing? You well? Not the nicest thing to be confronted with, is it? First thing on a wet and miserable Tuesday morning. It's dreadful out there. I'm kind of sick of it, to be honest. Weather systems don't often get me down, but we've had nothing but non-stop heavy rain now since Friday, and I've had enough of it. You know, when you've got a dog, or even when you keep fit as I do, how annoying it is to get soaked into the skin 3 or 4 times a day. I'm absolutely sick of it now. But anyway, I see the newspapers are linking the extremely wet weather with climate change this morning. They are, genuinely, some of them, and all of that. But I won't dwell too much on that. It is October 1st, isn't it? New month and all of that. And in theory, in 30 days' time, we're supposed to leave the European Union. That's the UK, of course. I don't believe for a minute that's going to happen. And I promise you, I won't dwell too much on that this morning. Because, well, how many new ways can I find to express my feelings or feeling opinion on that particular subject? Anyway, very quick few hellos. Hello to Dilip, to Lux Maya, to James Burge. How you doing, James? To Keith Skegwin, to Martin Ellen, to Greg Parker, to Jessica, to Matthew Hughes, to Who Knows 33, who enjoyed listening to Moncton of Brenchley last night. He's always interesting, Christopher. Hi to Matt Anonymous in Western Massachusetts, to Bob, to Jacqueline in Australia, Jennifer Garcia, Paul White. Hi, Liz. Thanks so much, Liz, for the super chat. I really appreciate that. You don't have to do that all the time, Liz. Thanks very much for doing it. I really appreciate it. Hi to Lawrence, to Paul, to Sir Hubert, to Jason, to Coca Bell, Kinell. How you doing, kid? Rebecca, Stuart, John, don't be offended if you don't get mentioned. I'm not skipping over you deliberately. Thanks to UFO Daily for your contribution too. Thanks so much, mate. I appreciate that. Mad About the Guy, Pierre, John and Sarah Stott, Richard, Jane Brooks. How you doing, Jane? Good morning, Jane. Jane, you're not... Have I seen you on Twitter, Jane? You're not the former female pugilist, are you? You might not be. There is a Jane who tweets me from time to time who has boxed. Mr. Sin, did you watch the game? I did. I watched that painstakingly boring cure for insomnia that was Manchester United versus Arsenal last night. I'd a Stu Mitch to Shield Destroyer to Ronda. And to Graham Boo. Thanks, Graham, for the old donation there, the old super chat donation. Graham, put a link up there on the super chat for where people can buy tickets on November 2nd to go to the first Trigger Warning Free Speech Extravaganza in Manchester near Cheetham Hill, just off Cheetham Hill. I'll be in attendance. Looking forward to that. I've been invited to opine about free speech, and I'm looking forward to it. Hey, listen, just a quick word on free speech before we look at the newspapers. I'm not somebody who spends any time reading comments on Facebook, which I'm not on anyway, Twitter or on YouTube. I don't waste too much time looking at comments, good comments or bad comments even, or indifferent comments. When you've been around a long time in the media, as I have, you tend to, you go very Kipling-esque. You take praise and you take criticism, and you treat those two imposters quite the same. Praise and criticism, you treat them the same way. You don't pay too much attention to it. It's nice to be praised. It's nice to be criticised. It's nice that people listen and take the time to opine. But I had Alison Chablow on the programme last night, the comedian and singer. That's what Alison is. I had some emails this morning from some Jewish folks who took issue with my characterisation of Alison as a comedian. That's what she is, whether you find her funny or not. Well, that's your own business, isn't it? But that's what she is. But I had her on last night to talk about her near jailing last week and the story behind that. The songs that she posted on YouTube that led to her being convicted last year for sending an offensive communication. Ah, you know, it's the long-winded bloody thing. using a channel like YouTube, sending malicious communications and all that. She appealed and lost the appeal. And then last week it was alleged that she'd breached her probation and she was told to go back to prison. Well, to go to prison for 8 weeks. And then she was released on unconditional bail. So I had her on last night. Comments are interesting at times when you can use them to illustrate a point. Here's a couple of them, which I find interesting. Somebody describing themselves as Grey Chip. Does anyone think Richie has splinters in his arse for all defence sitting? And that was referring to the conversation I had with Alison. It's interesting that. I've talked about this before. Often those who scream the loudest about having the most open of minds are often the most closed-minded people. Often those who shout the loudest about being awake are people who are often in the deepest of slumbers, I would argue. And you see this sometimes in these comments. You bring Alison Chablow on the programme, or anybody who's got a very strong viewpoint, no matter what the subject is. And it is incumbent upon you, as the presenter, as the broadcaster, to speak on behalf of those who are not in the room, even if you have extended them the courtesy of an invitation and they have turned you down. It is still incumbent on you, the presenter, to say, well, other people say this or other people say that. There is another point of view. What about this? What about that? That's your job, really. It's not fence sitting. It should be an enormous compliment to be accused of fence sitting. On the subject of Israel, laughable to accuse me of fence signalling. There's not a fence signalling. Fence sitting. There. I don't think there's a radio presenter in the UK who has been more subjective about how he feels, how I feel about Israel. I've called it illegitimate. I've said it has no right to exist under international law. I have accused its leaders and its military of out-Nazi-ing the Nazis. And for going to the trouble of expressing that opinion, I've been threatened physically. My life has been threatened. And the national media has libeled me and accused me of promoting Holocaust deniers. There's nothing fence straddling or sitting about my position on Israel. But while I agree that it is preposterous and dangerous and fairly terrifying to be convicting people for having an opinion, however repugnant you might find that opinion, it is incumbent on me to point out that if you were listening to a programme like that and you are Jewish, and maybe you knew, maybe an ancestor, maybe a relative of yours was interred in Germany, they might find songs about Auschwitz and they might find songs about theme parks offensive. So it's my job to put those questions to Alison Chablow. I couldn't have been any clearer in that I'm not going to fall into line and be told how I must feel about people like Alison Chablow personally. I made this perfectly clear. I'm not going to be told that I must hate people because of their opinion. I don't hate Alison Chablow, even though I disagree with some of what she has said or has to say. But it's fascinating. Then I was accused of virtue signalling. I don't have any virtues to signal, really. I don't. And I certainly wasn't virtue signalling to anybody last night. The Jewish Chronicle, the Jewish media in this country, the press have decided that I'm a hateful figure and a hateful promoter of anti-Semitic conspiracy theorists. You don't get accused of that by being a fence straddler or by being a virtue signaller. But it's an interesting thing to illustrate the thinking of people who consume the independent media and would have you believe that they're open-minded or they are awake. And I'll leave this little segue before we look at the front pages with this. If I had my way, I reckon a great number of Richie Allen Show listeners would never listen at all. What do I mean by that? If I had my way, they wouldn't listen. I don't mean that I'd prefer they don't listen. I don't mean that at all. I mean that if I had my way, the show would be filled to the brim with two or three-way debates with people like Alison, but also sitting opposite her with those whom she disagrees or with those who most vociferously attack her and attack others like her. And that actually, ironically, wouldn't suit the majority of listeners to the Richie Allen Show. Because the majority of the listeners to the Richie Allen Show, this is where I get old Gerard Ratner. Do you remember Ratner? The guy who torpedoed his own jewellery business. Do you remember Ratner? This is where I go old Ratner. And I say that which you're not going to like. The vast majority of listeners to the Richie Allen Radio Show, they only listen because they want to be fucking told what they want to hear. And they don't want to hear anything that challenges it. Ever. Ever. So if I had my way, most of them wouldn't listen because these Zionist figures that often get mentioned on the programme, they would be on the programme arguing with me and arguing with my guests. And that wouldn't suit the vast majority of my listeners. They would hate it. Like I said, the irony is thick. The vast majority of those who claim to be awake and open-minded are far from it. And these comments here, and there's a thread of them underneath yesterday's programme on YouTube, beautifully illustrate the point that I've just made. Completely not awake or open-minded. Because you're in a world, you're living in a bubble where all you want is your own opinion fed back to you. That's not being awake. It's being a fucking moron. Anyway, good stuff. Yeah, Gerald Ratner, yeah. He had a jewellery business that was thriving, didn't he? And then he gave a speech at a function and he said that it was a load of crap. A load of old tat. Sank his jewellery business. I might be getting listeners to turn off in their droves. I couldn't give a shit, to be honest. Seriously. Don't listen to me if you want to hear. If you want an echo chamber. Because I'm always going to challenge myself and my own thinking on all of these issues. And if I'm doing that, well, I must be challenging your thinking as well. Alison Shablo is somebody whom I've not met Alison, but I like her. I've enjoyed interviewing her. I don't agree with her on some issues. I think she makes a very good point when she says that Jewish children, particularly in Israel, are being mind-fucked from a very young age into believing that they're... And this is what identity politics is anyway. We're seeing it everywhere now. But into believing that they are special, that they are chosen, and that they are born with a big target on their backs, that they are hated just because they are Jewish. And I think she's right to say that. But a lot of Jewish people who might agree with Alison, that's why I brought up Norman Finkelstein last night, they might say, well, you're not best placed to make that judgment, Alison, because of the songs that you've sung or sing or sang. But anyway, what we've got with the Richie Allen Radio Show is a place where we can, where everyone is invited to speak on it, no matter what they think. Sadly, increasingly, it's become impossible to get debates heard on programmes because the Zionist lobby, just to take one particular subject or topic, it has adopted the position now in recent years of refusing to appear on radio programmes and to participate in debates and using the excuse, well, I couldn't go on his programme because he hates Israel or because he has interviewed in the past Holocaust deniers. And they don't really mean that. It's just any old excuse will do. They don't want to appear on programmes like mine because they don't want to answer the questions that I would put to them, particularly because I would be very nice and very mild-mannered, but I would insist on them answering the questions that I pose on my shows all the time. And that's why Zionists and the Jewish lobby or the Zionist lobby, the Israeli lobby, avoids speaking with me and others like me like the plague. Anyway, let's have a look at the front pages of the papers. I've gone on too long there. Johnson to reveal his final Brexit plan. The Conservative Party conference is taking place in Manchester. Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, will address the conference today. Sajid Javid did yesterday to the Chancellor. It'll be Johnson's turn tomorrow. And it is reported today that he will put on the table, as it were, his plans for Brexit. Very brief analysis of that in a minute, because the Irish national broadcaster RTE, that's Radio Telefiche Éireann, has claimed overnight that it has seen a leaked document, and that the leaked document outlines Boris Johnson's proposals to avoid the Northern Ireland, the Irish backstop. The backstop is an insurance arrangement that would keep Northern Ireland and the UK in a temporary customs union, although it's not really meant to be temporary. And the reason for keeping it in that customs union would be to avoid a hard border in Ireland, which some have said would be counterproductive in terms of the Good Friday Agreement, and that it might, you know, lead to tensions increasing again among nationalist and loyalist communities and all of that old bollocks, because that's nonsense. So anyway, RTE has said, we've seen a memo, and the memo outlines Johnson's proposals for the movement of goods in Ireland. And RTE says, the memo we have seen shows that there would be a border post in Ireland and in the north, several miles away from the border, but that there would be a post, okay? There would be a customs post. And there's consternation about this morning, because Boris Johnson said these are old plans, and it looks like he might be telling Porky Pies, these are old plans, these are not the plans we are going to present to the European Union. But others are saying, no, those are the plans. And the European Union is saying, these are a non-starter, we're not going to stand for the erection or the building of any customs post or buildings that would constitute basically a hard border and all the rest of it. So this is all over the news this morning. I've explained that as well as I can. I think you understand it. The Financial Times, Riyadh woos Aramco investors by dangling €75 billion yearly payout. Johnson to know by the weekend whether he has a chance of Brexit deal. That's the Financial Times. We'll move on. What's in the Times? Block Brexit delay, says Johnson. Here's the story. Okay. Johnson wants the European Union to say, okay, we will ixnay. We will throw out the possibility of delaying the departure by 3 months. Johnson is going to ask the European Union to rule out an extension as part of his new deal. And he's going to announce this tomorrow when he gives his keynote speech to the Conservative Party conference at the GMEX in Manchester. Now, what's interesting about that this morning is that anybody who's listened to BBC Radio this morning will know that the European Union and its officials have been saying to anybody who will listen in the last 24 hours that they are now 100% certain that there will be an extension beyond October 31st. They are laughing at this, and they are also saying, but we don't know yet who is going to request it, whether it will be Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, or whether it will be somebody else. The arrogance is breathtaking. The EU is saying, we are absolutely certain now that there will be an extension to January 31st. It's just that we don't know who's going to come and beg for it, whether it'll be Johnson or whether it will be another Prime Minister, whether it'll be John Bercow. Right. What's in the Mirror? Boris lover in fear over her stolen laptop. This is the woman who allegedly had a relationship with Boris Johnson. You know, he's been accused of, on the one hand, groping a journalist back in 1999. He's also been accused of doing favours for an American former model businesswoman when he was mayor of London that he was having a sexual relationship with. She's now said that her laptop has been stolen, and that laptop contains files, diaries, planners, detailing meetings with Johnson and others during that particular period of time. New bombshell. Her laptop has been stolen. Nice. These are handy. These are really timely things to be happening, aren't they? As we approach this day when we're supposed to be leaving the European Union. That would be Halloween, October 31st. It's not going to happen. The iPaper. Government of National Unity talks begin. Well, one of Sky's political reporters, I can't think of his name. He's one of their more senior ones. He interviewed, who did he interview yesterday? He interviewed Anna Soubry. He interviewed Ian Blackford, the leader of the Scottish Nationals in Westminster. And he interviewed the joint leader of the Greens, is it Caroline Lucas, about this idea that after a vote of no confidence in Johnson, which might come this week, it might not, that a government of national unity would be formed, that they would go to the Queen and say, Johnson doesn't have a majority anymore and he's lost a vote of no confidence. We can form our little government of national unity temporarily. But yesterday when these people were interviewed on Sky, they didn't seem to be any closer to agreeing on who would lead this government of national unity, whether it will be Cat Weasel there in the middle or Jimmy Cranky there on the right hand side. And I don't know who Joe Swinson looks like, the leader of the Liberal Democrats, the not so liberals, definitely not very democratic Liberal Democrats. So this is just nonsense by the iPaper, wishful thinking maybe. But you know, this is all mathematics. Ultimately, it ends where, dear listener? Where? With no Brexit. Here's the Express. Priti Patel is going to give a speech today saying that they're going to crack down on crime. You could take any speech given by any Home Secretary at any Conservative Party conference at any time in history, and the speech is invariably about, we're going to crack down on crime. So she's promising stiffer sentencing. She's promising that violent criminals will serve at least 2/3 of their sentence, of their tariff, in the future. Right? And they won't be getting out so soon under proposals she'll be tabling at the conference today. That's according to the Express. Anyway, what's on the Daily Mail front page? End of the soft prison sentence, same story. Violent criminals to serve 2/3 and drunken yobs will wear electronic sobriety tags. There you are. There you are. Have we got that story we have? I think we might have. In the Mail, there it is. Drink drivers and other criminals who've been convicted of alcohol-related violence will be tagged. This is an American thing that's coming in over here. This has been around in America for some time. It's a device that measures your alcohol level. It measures the alcohol level in your blood, and it does so by analysing the sweat on your wrists. And if you're a little fucking eejit who can't handle your booze and you end up brawling outside the Dog and Duck in Swindon on a Saturday night and you cause carnage or damage and you cause unnecessary expense to the taxpayer because the police have to come and deal with you, or because you go to accident and emergency because you're a fucking idiot who can't handle your drink, well, apparently you might have to wear one of these things for 4 months. Basically, you'll be told you're not allowed to drink anything for a certain period of time, and this device will measure the sweat on your wrists. If I'd have worn that on Sunday morning last, I think it would have fucking blown up, to be honest. But that's nothing to be proud of. I'm not bragging. I think the thing would have burst into flames. And the Mail shows a picture of this gentleman here, which is a bit unfair, really. The guy's not a murderer. He's not an axe murderer. He's not a paedophile. God love him. He's the first guy that's ever been told that he has to wear one of these devices. There you are. Lindsay Lohan has had one. If Lindsay Lohan has had one, well then Charlie Sheen must have gone through about 100, right? So that's how they're going to crack down on crime. What's on the front page of The Sun? Bacon's safe, no ifs or butties. This is a story that's in some of the newspapers today. Scientists have concluded that eating red meat does not make you more likely to suffer from ill health, does not make you more likely to have a stroke, and doesn't make you more likely to have a heart attack. So those who consume lots of red meat, which I don't anymore, I used to be somebody who would have a bit of rump steak once or twice a week, bit of sirloin every now and then, and a bit of lamb when you can afford it. Nobody can afford lamb anymore, eh? Jesus Christ. For those of you who shop, right? Leg of lamb, are you shitting me? Good luck with that, right? Anyway, so yeah, they're saying that don't worry about getting ill from eating red meat. You're going to be all right. The vegans are keeling over. Metro, BBC U-turn over race row star. I won't dwell on this. I did opine on it yesterday. Naga Munchetti, great name, Naga Munchetti, is one half of the BBC's breakfast team. Well, it's a big team, producers, editors. But the on-camera team, Dan Walker and herself. And the BBC upheld a complaint that she wasn't impartial when discussing Donald Trump some weeks and months ago. When Trump told congresswomen to go back to where they came from, or something along those lines. Which, excuse me, which people are entitled to draw from those comments, if they want, that they are racist. If people want to draw that from, if people want to say, well, that's racist, really. You know, he's calling into question their loyalty in some way. He's suggesting that they don't belong in the United States, or that they don't have a right to an opinion on what happens in the United States. So if you want to take from that that he was being racist or xenophobic, you can be forgiven for drawing that conclusion. But BBC news presenters mustn't do that. And, you know, this is age-old conduct expected of BBC presenters. They're supposed to report on the story and move on. She didn't. And she was censured. She was censured by her bosses. But there was an outcry from black celebrities and people of interest in the UK. They said it was outrageous. It's patently obvious that Trump was being racist. Why can't she speak about it? So the BBC has capitulated. And the Director General, Tony Hall, sent a missive, an email around to everybody. Basically saying it is racism. And Naga is one of our stars. And all the rest of it. She might be a star, I don't know. Not supposed to be stars, you know. When did it become about the person? When did media become more about the messenger and not so much about the message? It's happened, you know, it's as bad in the independent media, of course, as it is in the mainstream media. At the risk of annoying my black viewers, tough shit, Paddy. They were right to uphold the complaint. It's not for her to attribute motive or motives to Donald Trump. It is up to the viewer to do that. Donald Trump has been accused of racism by four congresswomen. In a tweet, Mr. Trump said, go back to your own countries or whatever. Leave it at that. The viewer at home, thank you, is more than capable of concluding whether or not they believe Trump was racist or not. Not for you to do it. But the lovies in the press have rushed, there's that word virtue, that term virtue signalling again, have rushed to the typewriters to stand with Naga. to demonstrate to the world their virtue and how decent they are and how racially sensitive they are. Instead of telling the truth, shut your big fucking mouth, read the story, move on to the sports and the weather. Okay. Or give up all pretense of impartiality, BBC, because it isn't impartial, we know that, and let these presenters do whatever they want. But acknowledge to the watching audience that you're no longer doing news. That it's commentary. Because that's where we're going anyway. Everything is commentary, right? That's the Metro. I think the Guardian runs with it as well. BBC caves in over censure of TV presenter in Trump racism row. Lovely. Ministers defend PM on groping allegations. This Times journalist who alleges that she was groped by Donald Trump in 1999. This is Charlotte Edwards. She says that she was at a lunch with what am I talking about? She was at a Trump with Boris Johnson. Jesus Christ, Richie. Huh? Thinking of five different things at one time there. Charlotte Edwards, when Johnson was at the Spectator, Boris Johnson, now the Prime Minister, she alleges that she was at a lunch with him and she felt his hand on her thigh. Then again, I'm not saying he didn't do that. And I'm certainly not saying it's inappropriate. I don't know. If you're having a meeting with somebody of the opposite sex or the same sex, and you see, you just don't know, do you, what was going on? Flirtation? I have no idea whether he did it or whether he didn't do it. And if he did do it, why did he do it? What signals did he get? Maybe he didn't get any. Maybe he did it. Maybe he's just, a privileged, entitled little bastard who thinks that he can stick his hand on women's thighs, maybe. But what the fuck are we talking about this for 20 years later? And the timing of it is perfect. She's got a new column in the Times. He is allegedly trying to get Brexit over the line. The entire establishment doesn't want that to happen. You know? Don't call me a misogynist. I don't know. I can honestly say I have never in my life behaved inappropriately with anybody, any man or any woman. I wouldn't do that. Even if I was rat-arsed pissed, I wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't do it. It's not the type of thing I would do. She'd have to make the first move. But 20 years later, come on. Do I have to repeat that I don't have any time for Boris Johnson? I just did. The Star, Premier or Premace Barkley has had his chips. Cops escort him to ATM in row over cab. Ross Barkley apparently was in a cab and he had a bag of chips and he spilt them on the floor. Caused a bit of a mess. He must have had gravy. Chips and gravy. And cabbie got annoyed. Police were called. And I think it was settled with a bit of kind of King Solomon-esque wisdom. Mr. Barkley, looks like you spilled chips on that man's car. I can see the fucking stains from here. You're earning £200,000 a week, Mr. Barkley. Get over to the ATM and buy him the price. Withdraw for him the price of a good carpet cleaner. And then fuck off to bed. Good policing, that. Yes! No need for solicitors or court cases. Bit of King Solomon-esque stuff there. I can see the chips on the fucking floor. I'm taking you to an ATM. Give him 50 quid. Bob's your uncle. Piss off. Ah, it's old school policing that, eh? Eh? I was privy to a bit of that when I was younger. Bit of old school policing. When I thought it would be funny in Waterford City as a young man at 10:30 on a Friday night when the quay in Waterford, the main street, the main thoroughfare across the bridge, the quay, that I thought it would be funny after having a few glasses of beer, not being able to hold my beer, to take a load of traffic cones and to arrange them in a way that they would divert traffic up a dead-end street. Pissed out of my brains I was. I did it, laughing gleefully, as motorists were going fucking bananas. I was 18 at the time. and I felt a little tap on my shoulder. And I looked around. And honest to God, this happened. It was a guy with a Cork accent. A police officer. A Garda Síochána. And he wasn't too impressed with my rearranging of the bollards and of the cones. He wasn't impressed at all. I think he gave me a little slap across the face. That's a fine mess you've created there, eh, boyo? He just made me collect all the bollards and he made me apologise to all the drivers. Then he taught me to get the fuck home. Which is what I did. Old school policing, you can't beat it. Yeah, that's a fine little display you've done there, boyo. Look, I didn't get my head kicked in by some of the drivers, to be honest, but anyway. I was young. Helen Mirren, eh? She doesn't believe in binary sexuality, Helen. I wish these people would just shut the fuck up. Do you know that? I mean, you say you're in favour of free speech, Richie. Yes, of course I am. But I mean, there's no such thing as male and female, says Helen Mirren. We're all somewhere in the middle, says Helen Mirren. Give over. That's in the mail if you want to read that today. Helen Mirren there. 74 she is, looking well. She's in Catherine the Great. Sky has a new series. Why is nobody speaking up for Russian-speaking actors and actresses? Why is there not a clamour from the Twitterati demanding that Sky apologise for Catherine the Great with these obviously English white privileged actresses? Why can't a Russian do it? Because the Russians are white too, you see. And we don't make any fuss about the rights of white people. I couldn't give a shit about any of this, but it makes me laugh. You know, if you're going to be consistent, right? Ah! What about Russian-speaking actresses? Ah! Right? No. 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 Jesus Christ. Jesus wept. Helen Mirren, eh? No such thing as male and female, says Helen. Good girl, Helen. New Disney show has gay characters in it. Producers confirmed that Orca and Flix in an animated children's series are the first queer couple in the franchise. The interesting thing about that is that that cartoon is aimed, that animated thing, is aimed at younger children. I mean, gay people do exist. There's nothing wrong with featuring gay couples in TV and in radio dramas, of course, because gay people are a real thing. But I'm always interested when the content is aimed at a much younger audience. What's the motivation? Now, the motivation might be entirely pure. It might just be genuine. You know, the writer might have just went, I think I'll make these two lads gay. Fair enough. That might be the case. But I wonder, is it always the case? I think sometimes there's something a bit more to it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist. Maybe I am. I'm just getting a lot of laughs lately at this whole blacking up controversy. Controversy, controversy, controversy. I'm getting very amused by it. Sir Desmond Swain blacked up as soul singer James Brown. Now, there's no fucking way that you can tell me that if you saw that picture, that you would conclude that he was trying to portray himself as the godfather of soul himself, James Brown. Right. But he's had to say it's him because these rumours were floating around for the last 2 days. And he says he doesn't understand why it's deemed to be offensive because he wanted to go as James Brown and his wife went as one of the Blues Brothers. His wife Moira. And he said he wanted to be as authentic as possible in his costume. Therefore he used the old, I don't know what it is they use. What is it? It's not polish, is it? It's not shoe polish. Presumably it's just some makeup they buy to do it. And this guy used to be David Cameron's principal private secretary, by the way. And There's murders over this. Because you're not supposed to do that, you see. According to the perennially, terminally outraged fuckwits on social media. This is what he really looks like. Can I ask my black... Because I've asked my black listeners and viewers before, but they've never responded to me. Maybe it's because I don't have many. Maybe it's because... I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm... I'm not going to finish that sentence. I'm not self-censoring. I just don't want to get into it. I won't get into it. But my black viewers, do you find it to be racist if a guy puts black polish on his face, dresses up as what he thinks looks like James Brown? Well, it looks nothing like James Brown. Because I just don't see how it could be offensive. And don't give me the stock lazy answer that years ago it was done to denigrate. Yes, it was. Of course it was. But who is anybody to impugn his motivation? Could it be possible that his motivation is not to mock or denigrate black people? Maybe he likes the music of James Brown, maybe. It's like I said before, if I went to a party, I'm a big tall lad, 6'6" tall, me. I might go to a fancy dress. Now, one of my musical heroes is Clarence Clemons from the E Street Band. Love Clarence Clemons. By the way, if you ever want to read a book that'll make you laugh hysterically from front to back, get Clarence's autobiography. It's an amazing thing. Came out in 2009. 2009. It's not all strictly true. It's about his life, but also he imagines. It's an amazing thing. It's almost like a fantasy. Anyway, Clarence Clemons. So I might go as Clarence Clemons. So I borrow Caroline's saxophone, right? But what am I going to do then? If I go wearing, I don't know, a suit maybe that Clarence would have worn or something like it. Nobody's going to know I'm Clarence Clemons. Even if I put black paint, they probably won't know. But am I being racist? I would say no, because I'm not racist. I don't hold racist feelings for people or anybody. So there you go. But people want to make a big deal of this. And this guy's been, you know, demands are being placed on him that he must apologise. Yeah. What else have we got? Interesting letter in the Times about vaccines today. Written by a doctor, Dr. David Elliman or Elman? I've got it on the tablet there, but I don't need to dig it out and read it. But it's a good letter. He's basically writing to say that mandating vaccines for children in the UK is not a good thing. So it's nice to see that by a man who works at Great Ormond Street Hospital, which is a very famous children's hospital in the UK. He doesn't think it's a good idea to mandate vaccines for children, neither do I. It's rather spooky. It's rather dystopian, isn't it? To say the bloody least, right? So that's in the Times, which sadly is a subscription-based website. You've got to pay to read it. And I'll tell you what I'll leave you with today. Two things. One, sad fishing. Social media sad fishing trend is harming mental health of children and leading to bullying, according to a HMC report. What is sad fishing? Well, sad fishing is when a celebrity usually posts on a social media channel about their own mental health, about them being sad or depressed. And it is usually followed by a flood of sympathetic responses, but also a flood of responses from officials, like politicians and doctors, to congratulate the celebrity or person of interest for coming out to talk about their mental health problems. Like we had Prince Harry Hewitt the other day, he came out, didn't he? And said that he wakes up every morning with the weight of the world on his shoulders. Apparently Justin Timberlake, or is it Justin Bieber? Justin Bieber, in fact. Timberlake is so 1990s. So 2000s even. Bieber told his 119 million Instagram followers. Jesus, huh? Wow. It's hard to get out of bed in the morning when you are overwhelmed with your life. Yeah. Sad fishing. Very good. Very well observed by the Telegraph. You see this everywhere. You see it in the independent media. You see independent media content creators constantly reminding their followers that they are being attacked by the establishment who wants to bring them down just because of what they do. All the time, you see it. Martyrdom. I know it's a different issue. Slightly different issue. But yeah, that's what they do. But where is it coming from? This is coming from a place that's a bit more sinister. You know? This agenda to convince us that we are all basically living with or have lived with or will live with mental health problems and that we have to accept it. And we need to have a broader dialogue about it. We need to speak more about it. We need to speak to children about it, our mental health problems. And what they're talking about, of course, mostly because there are some serious mental health issues. I'm well aware of it. And I don't want to upset people who are living with mental health conditions that are serious. But a lot of what these people are talking about are just everyday life problems. Life can be shit. Life can be boring. Life can be mundane. Life can be fucking tough. Oh yeah. Tell me about it. But that's not mental health problems. You know? That's a natural psychological reaction to a set of circumstances that you find yourself in that are difficult. So yeah, interest in that in the Telegraph today, I thought. Sad fishing, yes. Good that somebody's calling it out. It's a basket case, Twitter. I spend little time on it. I throw a message on there to say I'm doing this or the show. I read the tweets during the show. But outside of that, very rarely am I on it. Raj does more tweeting than I do and doesn't often declare it to be him. I must give him a kick in the arse for that. But I can't fucking stand it. It is madness to be on Twitter all day long. And people, some of my listeners, they live there. You're crazy. It is destructive. It is not healthy. You spend all your time on there. Wow. And whether you like to admit it or not, your face-to-face interaction with people is dwindling. It's on the wane. It's going down. You're living on social media. You're fucking nuts. Honestly. And we'll finish with this one. Dana White is the chief of the UFC. Is that right? One of the head honchos at the Ultimate Fighting Championship. This fucking lunatic cage fighting thing that people watch. Tez watches it. Crazy Tez watches it in Salford. Loves it. Couldn't meet a more mild-mannered guy, Tez. Good guy. They watch this mad, violent shit, this UFC, which I have no time for. But that's just me. Listen, each to their own. Not judging anybody. I still like Tez. White is not bowing down to calls to scrap the Octagon girls. They fight in an octagon. Well, it's a cage shaped like an octagon. They kick bells out of one another until somebody is knocked out or until somebody submits or until somebody can't continue and the referee has to jump in. It's fairly barbaric. Right? You're fairly judgmental. I might be, but that's just my opinion. Shoot me for it if you want. I don't like it. It's pretty ugly, isn't it? I know the men and women who participate, they're very skillful, they're very fit and all the rest of it, but is that the best thing to do with your life? Knock the fuck out of somebody, you know? I would have thought not. But there have been calls that UFC follows Formula One, which got rid of the grid girls, and the darts, which got rid of the walk-on girls. But Dana White is saying to the feminists, fuck right off. We will do whatever we want. The girls are ambassadors for the sport. We will continue to employ them. Good man. Good man. Does anybody ask the girls? Did anybody really ask the girls? In England they did. In England, Good Morning Britain interviewed some of the walk-on girls and interestingly enough, it turned out that the girls are articulate, are witty, are bright, are educated, can fucking read, and can speak for themselves. And the girls said, this is outrageous. We work for an agency. They say, Do you want to work at the Echo Arena in Liverpool on Thursday? We'll give you £1,000. And you will wear a nice cocktail dress. And you'll wear a sash with the name of the sponsor on it. And you will go to the stage with the players. And later on, you'll do some hostessing and take some photographs of the sponsors and meet some of the fans. Yeah, I'd like to do that. It's a handy fucking job, that. No! It's demeaning to women everywhere! No, it's a smart woman making a few fucking bob. Smart. And you so want to support feminists in their struggle against the lunatics in the trans agenda. Men who dress up as women, who want to share intimate spaces with women. You desperately want to support feminists. And I do. But then feminists do, which is kind of anti-feminism, really, when they say, you know, you've got to fire all these women. How about asking them what do they think? Lucy, Angela, Mary, have you worked in the Octagon? Have you worked at Vegas? I have. Do you find it demeaning? Were you being leered at? Were there a bunch of men in the audience going, whoa, when you walked past? No. They weren't, actually. Because it's not just anti-feminism. It's gaslighting men. We're all a bunch of fucking idiots led by the cock and balls. Is that when you're at the darts? And Michael Van Gerwen and Gary Anderson are coming in. You're like, whoa. You're not. You're singing the Michael Van Gerwen song. Or the Gary Anderson song. I'm sure the women would say, no. The lads are a bit pissed up. They might whistle. They might say things every now and then. But they're having a good time. Doesn't bother us. Couple of hours work, £1,000 in the back pocket. Come on, like. Exactly. Jesus Christ. Did anybody ever do that? And even if they fucking did, I wouldn't mind. No, I'm not going to say that either. Listen, I'm going to go. I think it stopped raining, so I'm going to try and have a run. I didn't run yesterday. I took a day off running yesterday because I was in town yesterday morning meeting my solicitor. My brief. I'm not in any legal trouble. I'm not going to court with anybody. Well, I might be, but I won't be the one answering the questions. So that's why I didn't run yesterday. So I'm going to have a run now, and then I'm going to get to work on tonight's radio programme. So until tonight, by the way, check out triggerwarning.tv on YouTube. Go to Trigger Warning on YouTube. Check out Graham Booth and Hayden Hewitt. And if you are in the northwest of England or in the north, somewhere handy, if there's any tickets left, come to the Trigger Warning Free Speech Extravaganza on November 2nd, which is a Saturday evening. I'm going to be there watching on as a spectator. I will be asked a few questions on the evening, and that will be nice as well. It'll be nice to meet up again with Graham and old Hayden. But I'll be there having a cold beer. So come along. Be nice to say hello to you. And I really enjoy what the lads do. The great champions of free speech, the lads, you know. In an era where this programme, my radio programme, is being called out by the national media as a promoter of Holocaust deniers, which is fucking bullshit. It's nice that there are still guys around like Hayden and Graham who will say, no, we'll talk to the guy. We'll promote his programme because everybody should be heard, no matter how repugnant somebody might think what is being said. I don't say anything repugnant. I know Israelis fucking hate me because I say Israel is illegitimate. It has no right to exist. The IDF is basically the SS. Murder. Children. Lock them up without giving them access to lawyers. Stealing land on a daily basis. No historical right to exist. I say all that because I believe it to be true. Not because I want to hurt anybody's feelings. It's the fucking truth. And I have the right to say that. And if Zionists disagree with me, please come on my radio show and tell me, like you used to do. Do you remember? On Talk Radio Europe, all those lovely Zionists who used to come on with me and argue with me. Gobby with the days. Would I that we had those days again? Would I wish it so? Would that it would be so? Would that it were so? But they won't come on. So there you go. Trigger warning and all the rest of it. Okay, that's it. Time for me to go. Thanks for this. It's crap, this, but thanks for watching it anyway. And this isn't, you know, the old fishing for compliments. It's fucking crap. But it's enjoyable crap. Leaving you with the old man again. Take the fucking picture. Take the fucking picture. See you later. Bye. Jesus.